of the sermon is the big picture. The big picture. If you could open your Bibles up to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis 37. I'm going to use Joseph, the son of Jacob, for our example of the big picture. And hopefully we'll be able to apply this to our everyday lives. So it just won't be a lesson from the Bible, but it'll be a lesson that you can live by. In Genesis 37, now Joseph, he has many different aspects you have to see about his life. The first one is that he was Joseph the favorite. Joseph the favorite. In verses 3 and 4 of Genesis, now Israel, or Jacob, as he's known as, loved Joseph more than all his sons, because his son, it was a son of his old age, and that he made him a very colored tunic. And his brothers saw that his father loved him more than all his brothers, and they hated him and could not speak to him on friendly terms. And the primary reason why he was a favorite among the 12 sons of Jacob was that he was the first son of Rachel, the wife whom he loved more than Leah and the two concubines. And he, Joseph, his name means add another, which the other was Benjamin, the youngest. He was shown preferential treatment as demonstrated by this multicolored tunic. Back in those days, to have something with a lot of colors, well, that was fancy. You know, today we try to go with more earth tones, things like that. But back then, you look at him, man, he's like the golden child. And this did not make them happy at all, these other brothers. In fact, anytime you play favorites with kids, it's going to come back to haunt you a little bit. And but then you also have to see Joseph the dreamer. He's more than just a fancy coat-wearing favorite. He's also the dreamer. In the first dream, verses 5 through 8 of chapter 37, he had this dream and he told to his brothers. They hated him even more, it says. This is why. Listen to this dream and tell me if you're one of those brothers, if you would not also have a problem with this. He says, listen to this dream. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and my sheaf rose up and stood erect, and your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. And his brother said, are you actually going to reign over it? You think you're reigning over us? You talking to me? But then he has the second dream. And the second dream, in verses 9 through 11, he says, lo, I had another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. I think that multicolored tunic's gone to his head, his brothers are thinking. In fact, his dad even gives him a rebuke about this. You think we're going to bow down to you? I'm your father. And so he's Joseph the dreamer. Put that picture into your image of Joseph. But then he's Joseph the hated. You have to look at him as that too. Verse 37, 12 and following, you know, one day Jacob sent Joseph to go check on his brothers. And Joseph had a history of ratting out his brothers, I guess. You saw that early on. You know, he told his dad something the brothers did. And so, I mean, he's not the most endeared brother. There was certainly some animosity between him and his brothers. Here's how you can tell for sure. When he went out to check on them, they said, here comes this dreamer. Now then, come, let us kill him and throw him into the pits, and we will say a wild beast devoured him. That's kind of the sign that you might not like somebody. When you want to kill him and throw him in a pit, have their body disappear. Yeah, I think that he's Joseph the hated. Then we'll see what comes of those dreams. And so, yeah, that's right. Covered my mouth. Nothing nastier than a bunch of germs coming through the PA system and into your face. And so you know, Jacob's firstborn, Reuben, he was convinced, no, no, let's just scare him. We'll throw him down that pit, make him think we're going to kill him. It'll just be attempted murder, okay? And then we'll pull him out, and then we'll fix that brother. Well, it backfired because Reuben, as he went to go set this up, he said, I'll come in, and me being the oldest, I'll rescue Joseph. Well, guess what? They sold him into slavery before he can get back. Judah said, well, what profit is it for us to kill it? Let's go sell him. We get some money, go out and buy that iPhone that we wanted to get, and you know, we'll sell him to those Ishmaelites. We'll get rid of him, and we don't have to know that, you know, we didn't kill him. Well, they sold him to some Midianite traders that were passing by for 20 shekels of silver, their own brother. They sold, and he was taken away to Egypt. And when Reuben found out about Joseph, that he'd been sold to this traveling Midianite band of Ishmaelites, you know, they had to come up with a story. He said, you know, now get this multicolored tunic, dip it in some gold or some goat's blood, and we'll go ahead and tell Dad that tell Dad that he was dead. That's cruel, isn't it? I mean, to tell somebody your kid is dead? Verse 33 and 34, he examined it, Jacob did. It is my son's tunic. A wild beast has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces. So Jacob tore his clothes and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned his son for many days. I don't know about you, but I would not want that on my conscience, that I caused hurt to somebody like that. But believe me, it never left their hearts, never left their mind. It will haunt them later and come back to bless them later. But then you have to understand Joseph the slave. Joseph the slave, 39 verses 1 through 4. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, he bought him, and he's in his house. It said in verse 2, the Lord was with Joseph. He became a successful man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And this master promoted him because he saw that everything Joseph touched turned to gold, so to speak. He was being blessed by God. And so he made him his personal servant, made him overseer of everything in the house. Everything that he owned was put in Joseph's charge. See, when a man is being blessed by God, it's hard not to be noticed by those that are around you. And in just a short time, he sees that the prosperity of God is with Joseph. And Potiphar says, you know, I am promoting you because I want you, someone that is being touched by the hand of God, to be over my house. But then we have to look at Joseph, not the slave, but Joseph the haughty. Okay? Joseph the haughty. See, there was somebody looking at him. You never thought you'd see that in a sermon, did you? 36 verse 6 through 9 says that he was handsome in form and appearance. He was a hottie. Okay? And Potiphar's wife said, I think I'm going to cash in on this. So when her husband wasn't there, she came to him and she said, lie with me. He refused, said to his master's wife, behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. He put me in charge of everything. There's no one greater in the house than I. Nothing's withheld except you. Now you, I'm not over. So hands off the hottie. Because you want me to sin against God? Not going to happen. Her lust for Joseph persisted and persisted till one day she just threw herself at him. Like she was at like a Elvis concert or something. But she was angry and decided, you know, he runs out. You know, she's trying to grab his, pulls one of his garments off. You know, now, okay, didn't I just see a Hebrew guy run out missing his garment? So she frames him. When people come in, she says, oh, he was trying to throw himself at me. Look, you brought in this slave, and he's trying to take advantage of me. And so then he became Joseph the prisoner. He was thrown into prison. Verse 39, 21 through 23. But the Lord was with Joseph. He didn't leave him. He was with Joseph. He extended kindness to him and gave favor in the sight of the chief jailer. That almost sounds like an oxymoron, doesn't it? Yeah, I show kindness to you through a jailer. Well, the chief jailer committed to Joseph charge all the prisoners that were in jail. Whatsoever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and he did. Whatever he did, the Lord was making him to prosper. See, even while being unjustly locked up in prison, Joseph prospered and was made a supervisor. The chief jailer just put his trust in this young Hebrew prisoner. And it was here that he became Joseph the interpreter. First, it was the cupbearer and the chief baker's dreams. The cupbearer of Pharaoh and the chief baker, they were both locked up. They did something that made Pharaoh angry. And the cupbearer and the baker, they each had a dream, and it bothered them. And Joseph came to them in the morning, observed them, and said, "Why are you so dejected?" Pharaoh's officials, they said, "Well, we had these bad dreams. We don't know. We don't have someone to interpret them." He said, "Only God can interpret dreams." With that in mind, the cupbearer told him the dream, and Joseph interpreted that man, the cupbearer, would be restored to his office in 3 days. And Joseph said, "The only request is you don't forget me when you leave here. Get me out of here. Tell somebody." And the chief baker, he liked what he heard and said, my turn. Okay, here's my dream. Didn't turn out so good. He said, "Oh, in 3 days, you're a dead man." Oops, didn't like that. He said, "You'll be executed in 3 days. That's what your dream is saying." And sure enough, those exact things happened. In 3 days, God was proven true again through Joseph. 40 verse 21, he restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand, and he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph interpreted them to them. The chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. But then it was time to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. 2 years later, Pharaoh, he has a couple bad dreams. And lo, in the first dream, well, it's the passage that Paul read. Seven cows grazing, and then seven gross, ugly, gaunt cows come up out of the bank of the Nile and devour the seven good cows. Then you have the ears of corn being devoured by the slack-looking corn. I don't know about you, if I had a dream like that, I probably wouldn't share it with somebody. I'd just say, you know, sometimes Jan will ask me, you know, she'll say, "Oh, I had this particular dream. What'd you dream about?" Half the time, I don't know. That's why I'm glad, too. You know. And by the way, I'm here to tell you, I rode that dream, the falling one, to the end, and you don't die at the end of it, okay? I purposely rode that bad boy all the way down to the ground, and I just bounced, got up, and I was comforted. So I don't know how I managed to do that, but I had those falling dreams, and I did it. So I'm a survivor of the falling dream. Well, the cupbearer, he finally remembered Joseph, and he told Pharaoh of the ability to interpret dreams. Oh, let me tell you, I forgot to mention earlier, but now, since you brought it up, as this guy, he can interpret dreams. They clean up Joseph, bring him into the presence of Pharaoh, and he interprets those dreams. There's going to be 7 years great abundant harvest, followed by 7 years of devastating famine. And you need to be saving up now, because when those 7 years of famine hit, they're going to be extremely bad. Pharaoh saw that as an accurate interpretation of the dream. Shortly thereafter, Joseph became Joseph, the prime minister of Egypt. 41 through 44. "You may be over my house, and according to all your command, all my people shall do homage. only in the throne will I be greater than you. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand and clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold necklace around his neck and had him ride a second chariot and proclaimed before him, bow the knee. He set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. He is now exalted to arguably the highest office in the land. He has a signet ring. I mean, Pharaoh put him in charge because he saw that leadership, that God was with him. They were known as the Hyksos kings later on in history. He was only 30 years old when he became prime minister of Egypt. And during the first 7 years, they filled those storage houses to the brim. And when the 7 years of famine were underway, the people were able to come and buy grain from Joseph. Verse 57 says, the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph because the famine was severe in all the earth. The result was Pharaoh reached a level of wealth unimaginable. And then he became Joseph the Intimidator. Verse 42, 1 and 2, Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. Jacob said to his sons, why are you staring at one another? Behold, I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there, buy some for us that we may live and not die. And that famine spread all the way to the region of Palestine. Verse 42, 7 says, when Joseph saw his brothers, when they came in to gather grain, to purchase this food, they didn't recognize him. He disguised himself to them and spoke harshly and said, where have you come from? They said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And then he remembered the dreams he had 13 years prior. The dreams that said he would be ruling over all of them. And he persisted in questioning them to intimidate them some. So much so, he locked them up in jail for 3 days. And when they were released, Joseph gave the commandment to bring Benjamin the youngest, because when he was questioning, he said, is this all? You know, who's all are you representing? They said, well, there's one brother, and one brother's dead, but this is all of us, and we got a dad. And so he used that information, because see, he has a plan. It's based on those dreams. He has to get dad out of that land and into where he can be with the family. And when Jacob heard that Benjamin, you know, they took Simeon, locked him up as an earnest until they'd bring Benjamin back with the next load. So they locked one of the brothers up, and the brothers go back to Jacob, and they say, here's the food. Where's your brother Simeon? Well, let me tell you the rest of the story. He said, well, what'd you tell him about Benjamin for? No way. He'll never go to Egypt. He's the only son I have left of Rachel. No way. Well, it's amazing how hunger makes you change things. Because then he became Joseph the Cunning. You see, the famine continued. Jacob once again called for his sons to go buy more food. And Judah reminded Jacob, listen, you know we have to take Benjamin back. We have to get our brother Simeon. We got to take Benjamin back to prove that we're not lying to this guy. I don't know how he knows it. He's sincere. He knows some information about us. But we have to bring Benjamin there. 43 verse 6, when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the house steward, bring men into the house and slay the animal, make ready. The men are to dine with me at noon. See, he had to let Benjamin go. Judah said, listen, it'll be my life. I'm telling you this one, I will bring your son back to you, Dad. We have to get some food. Well, they brought Simeon out of the cell and united him with the others. Joseph invited the brothers to a meal with him. They gave Benjamin 5 times the food than everyone else. Back in those days, if you were eating with royalty and they stacked it on your plate, you had to eat it. The rule was you ate everything on your plate. So Joseph was made sure Benjamin was bloated by the end of this meal. And when they headed back to Canaan, Joseph had his royal cup hidden in Benjamin's grain sack. And as soon as they got out of sight, this is where Joseph the cunning comes in, he has the men ride out and say, "All right, so one of you stole the prime minister's cup. Which one of you did it?" And they said, "None of us did. We didn't take it." They even said, "Whoever took it, fine. You can rest it, but I can tell you, we didn't touch it." They opened up Benjamin's grain sack. There it was. Judah and everyone, they just were crushed. They hauled Benjamin back to be arrested. Verse 44, 34. "For how shall I go up to my father if the lad is not with me? For I fear that if the father sees this, it will overtake him." Judah even offered himself as a substitute for Benjamin. They are now broken. But then, the big picture. Joseph the preserver. 45 verses 1 through 4. When Joseph, he couldn't control himself anymore. Before all who stood by him, he cried, "Have everyone go out for me, except the brothers." So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it. And the household of Pharaoh heard of it. And then Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Please come closer to me." See, they weren't even looking at him in the eye. It was a federal crime to look at someone that high in power directly in the eye. So now they're going to make some eye contact. "Come closer. Look, you'll see it's me." And they came closer. And here's the key. Here's the big picture. "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life." Finally, we see the big picture. He was sold into slavery in order to provide deliverance for his family. God had a promise way back in Genesis 3:15 about the seed line of the woman. If these people did not survive, God had Joseph sold into slavery to provide a way out for his people, the promised land people of Jacob. He'd be going back to Canaan to move the rest of the family to fulfill it. Look at 45 verses 26 through 44, or 26 through 48, or 28. They told him, saying, "Joseph is still alive." Picture your Jacob. "And indeed, he's ruler over all the land of Egypt." Think about it. You think your son is dead? That he's in some unmarked grave somewhere? And all the tears and the hurt you had, and the brothers come back and they have to make a confession. Not only is he not dead, he's ruling in Egypt. And when they told him all the words that Joseph had spoke to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. And then Israel said, "It is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." Joseph had a lot of little pictures in his life. He was hated by his brothers, but he didn't let it conquer him. He was sold into slavery, but he thrived in that slavery. He was thrown into prison, and once again he soared for the kingdom of God. They took him out of prison, and he shined for the glory of God. Most of you know how the historical account turns out. Jacob died in the loving care in the presence of his whole family. The people flourished in the famine, persecution, and deliverance. It's about the big picture. Genesis 46, 27. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came to Egypt were 70. When they came in, there were 70 total in that family. There were 12 tribes totaling 70 souls. If there were no redeemer in Egypt concerning Joseph, all the Israelites would have perished. But that was not the big picture. That was just a little picture. It's about a bigger picture. Exodus 15, 27, about four centuries later, when they passed through the Red Sea and they came to a place called Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they camped there. It was an oasis. Wait a second. 12, 70, that's right. These millions of Jews that flourished in Egypt and were about to go into the promised land are being reminded, you came out with 12 tribes and 70 people, and now this oasis is here to remind you, you're going in with millions. That's the big picture. Or is it a bigger picture? No, it's about an even bigger picture. Matthew 1, 21 through 23, and she will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, and he shall save the people from their sins. Now all this took place to fulfill which was spoken through the Lord, through the prophet. Behold, the virgin shall be with child, and she shall bear a son, and they shall call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. Those 70 grew into millions, took the promised land, carried away into exile, and still they were able to bring forth the Savior of the world through the seed line of the woman. That's the bigger picture. But it's about the biggest picture of all. Not a big or bigger or even bigger, but the biggest picture of all. Here it is. Ready? Genesis 15, 5. God told Abraham, now look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you're able to count them. He said to them, so shall your descendants be. Hebrews 11, 12. Therefore, there is born even of one man, and him as good as dead, as many descendants as the stars of heaven number, as innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. Who's he talking about? If you got a mirror, you might want to pull it out. John 1, 12, 13, but as many as received him, he gave the right to become the children of God, even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. That's the biggest picture. Revelation 7, verse 9 and 10, as John heard the 12 tribes numbered 144,000, which is 12 times 1,000, which is all the people of God, he turned and saw, and they were without number. They could not be numbered. That's all the people of God. That's you, that's me, that's everyone who's bowed their knee to God and who has taken on Jesus Christ as their Savior, either before or after or during the cross. It's the people of God. That's the big picture. What started out as a crime against a young man named Joseph ultimately led him through slavery, through imprisonment, through government, through deliverance, through nation building, and through a Messiah and all who choose to follow him. That's the biggest picture of all. So here's the challenge. I leave you with this challenge for this week and hopefully for the rest of your life. Number one, always keep the big picture in mind. The big picture. What's your big picture? Hopefully your big picture is that you will be with God for eternity. For from him and to him and through him are all things. To him be glory forever. That's a long time. Amen. Yes. That's right. We're going to be worshiping God for eternity. That's what we want. We want to be there with God when the skies roll back like a scroll and we meet the Lord in the air. We shall be forever with him. That's the big picture. Then, number two, always keep the little picture in the big picture. We have a lot of little pictures. It might be Doug, the upset Christian picture. It might be Doug, the tempted picture. It might be someday Doug, the struggling with cancer picture. It might be Doug, the raising children picture. It might be Doug just got in a car wreck picture. It might be a thousand other pictures, but you look at those on the backdrop of the big picture. See, all these little pictures make up the big picture. And as long as the big picture's in mind and you view the little picture, what if the doctor tells you someday you have cancer? Well, that's just a little picture. I will not let it define me. The big picture, I'm going to be with God. The little picture is, I may get there quicker with this, but I may not. What if you lose your job? The boss calls you in this week and says, you're fired. I got to let you go. And you think, what am I going to do? Well, that's the little picture. The big picture is, well, I know I'm going to heaven, but let's see if we can't work on this little picture. One's a backdrop, one's just a little tiny picture. Whatever those little pictures are, always put them on the backdrop of that big picture. And number three, always remove anything that does not fit into either picture. Did I have that picture with Joseph? Yeah, I did. Well, I had all those separate pictures. See, you look at Joseph's life. It turned out great, didn't it? Now look at your life. It's going to turn out great. Make sure you keep the big picture in mind, the little pictures in perspective, and any picture that shouldn't be there, like sin or things that you're doing that don't fit into the big or the little picture, get rid of it. You don't need that in your photo album. Just get it out. Remove it. You only work in great photo albums. We have ladies in the church that they're always, they're like experts on scrapbooking. They call it scrapbooking, but it doesn't look like scraps when they're done with it. You're afraid to touch it and look at your pictures. You know, oh man, look at that. This is glowing. Oh, look, a real chunk of the Ark of the Covenant in here. They've got that everything in there. But, you know, they're particular on what they put in the big picture. They always put the theme on the front, like Happy Days or something, you know. And you open it up, oh, look at this, and they all fit the same theme. They don't put the picture when somebody whacked their thumb with a hammer or something. Oh, that fits. No, it doesn't. Well, we'll put that in the other picture album. That's what life is like. There's a big picture, the album. There's a little picture. That's right now. And then there's all those other pictures that they didn't make the scrapbook. Get rid of them. If you follow that path, I think you'll be a lot happier. Remember Joseph. And remember the big picture at all times. I want you to think about that while we offer this invitation song.